Good evening, you're very welcome to the Women's League of Ireland podcast here on finalwhistle.ie with myself, Breffni Early, and of course, once again, Aaron Clark of the Women, the WNL show. Is that the right title for you, Aaron?
I'd say that's the right one. I don't know if we'll rebrand at this stage, but it's...
I know, we're trying to... it is what it is. We're here another week, episode 9 of the podcast. We're going to be chatting to Galway United's Jenna Slattery after her match-winning strike against Sligo Rovers at the weekend. She'll be up in just a couple of moments. Match-winning strike in the 6th or 7th minute of a match. Not a bad trick, but it is what it is. We'll chat and get her thoughts on that later on in the programme. But Aaron, I suppose it's been a weekend of interesting games. A really good performance from Tralee against DLR to get a point. We'll talk maybe about a penalty opportunity in that game, which maybe could have seen them nick all three just at the death. Plenty of penalty discussions this week. We're going to talk about referees later in the programme as well. Could Wexford have rescued a draw with a penalty in the last minute? We'll chat about that. And then maybe an interesting sending-off situation that we actually think, on hindsight, that maybe the referees got right. But we'll talk about that later on in the programme. Aaron, your highlights of the weekend. Where were you? What were your thoughts on the games?
I was in P-Mounts. I went to watch P-Mount and Wexford. I thought P-Mount's resilience was actually quite good, considering years gone by, they probably would have lost that game to Wexford. And like, even look at last year, they let them back into the game. I thought DLR, for me, probably the highlight of the weekend is probably DLR Waves. Just the fact that, Tralee United, the fact that they got the point against DLR, I think that's a big point. And the Galway train continues to go on. And there was many positives the weekend. I think, like, we'll get into each game in particular and we'll chat through the games in more detail. But for me, I think Tralee's result and the fact that Galway's momentum keeps going is an interesting sign.
Yes, well, 4 wins for Galway this season, with only 8 goals in the 4 column, which is a big enough achievement, really, in itself. It's been an interesting kind of season so far for them. A couple of swapping 1-0 victories and defeats in the early exchanges of the season, but they've really grown into it. And I suppose no better time, really, than to bring in Jenna Slattery, who's going to join us. Jenna, you're very, very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. And I suppose it's been an interesting start to the season for Galway, as we mentioned. Did you expect when you joined Galway United from Galway WFC that you'd be in this position at almost the first round of games done in the top 4 in the league?
Yeah, look, you never go into a league doubting yourself and your team. You always go in with high expectations. And when we started in pre-season, that's what we had. We had high expectations that we were going to go try win trophies this season, gel as a team together and try get the best out of each and every one of us. And that's what we've done so far. And there's still a lot more to come from us, but we're only at the start.
In terms of the squad, though, Phil Trill obviously was involved last year with the management side. But what's it been like with him taking over at the helm and, you know, getting the early results of the season? It must have been a big positive.
Yeah, look, Phil's a great manager. We all have great time for him. Like, we went into this season with a new style of play compared to last year, and it seems to suit all of us because we're all a great bunch of talented girls. And look, that style of play seems to suit us. We want to play football. That's what we're here for, and we've done that so far, and we're going to keep pushing on and keep playing football.
Looking at the game last week, of course, first time Sligo Rovers faced Galway this season. They made the journey down. A couple of players on either side have played for both clubs. Jim McGuinness, probably the most high-profile defection over the closed season. There's no love lost, I'd imagine, on the field, despite probably most of you being friendly off.
Yeah, I know there wasn't. Like, Sligo's always going to be a tough battle. At Connacht Derby, like, there's nothing better than a derby game. And look, Sligo are a great team. They've really put in the performance. But we were lucky enough, we got the win, and that's all that really mattered.
But for you, though, the early start, obviously Kate Thompson getting the first goal, and then yourself popping up, who actually started the move for the second goal by playing the ball out to Kate, and then continued to run into the box, 2-0 up early on, probably in a bit of dreamland, maybe a little bit disappointed, didn't see the game out a little bit easier.
Yeah, look, that's what we're struggling at, but we'll bounce back from that. We start the games really well, but we just need to keep consistent now. Going through the whole 90 minutes, we've talked. We're gonna build again. We've built this week. We're going to go on against DLR now this weekend and try to keep that consistency from the first whistle to the very end.
I was watching the highlights back of the game, and I don't think I've ever seen anybody as happy to be on a football pitch as Kate Thompson after she scored the first goal. Smile literally from ear to ear. it must be good in the camp at the moment. A new club, a bit of an enthusiasm. Maybe that was the club was struggling to keep towards the end of last year. I know we heard about kind of financial issues and stuff in the old setup. It must be lovely to be in that new environment, new players, new, despite a lot of it being quite similar, just that little bit of freshness to it. And really, it seems like a squad that's enjoying themselves.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we're such a young team, but I think that's what really helps us, because we all understand each other and it helps us gel together, because we're that young of a team. And I wouldn't doubt us just being that young team. I wouldn't doubt any of our ability, to be honest.
Was it good to get the monkey off the back in terms of home wins, especially under the Galway United banner, because a draw and a defeat in the first two games at home? Nice to get that off.
Yeah, we were disappointed with the loss against Bowes and then the draw against Rovers, but we had that belief in us to finally get that 3 points at home, and we can't drop it from here.
We talked about the differences. Tell us a little bit how it compares now to maybe last year. There's going to be differences. There's going to be things better, things not so good. How have you found that change, and what's the major differences between this setup and last year's?
Yeah, to be honest, there's not really much of a difference. Like, we're still playing the name DC. We still have everyone backing us, but maybe there's just that bit more backing with Galway United. The backroom staff, the management, the board, they're all behind us. And I have to give a shout out to the Maroon Army. They're at all our home games and even some of our away games. And they really, like, the support they give us is amazing. They're there from the start with the drums, right until the end, right until we're cooling down. They're just amazing. So they've really helped us as well.
You talked a little bit about the change not being much. Was it difficult though towards the end of last season, and what sort of expectations did you put in coming into this year? Because obviously when you get the news, Galway WSC are going, and then there was a bit of will Galway take it, won't Galway take it. What was that like?
Yeah, it was kind of hard at the start because we didn't really know what was going on. But once we heard Galway United were taking us over, like, we'd no doubt in them. Like, they're a great club. They've always been a great club with the men's side. So once we heard that news, it was kind of a bit of a like lift off the shoulder, but we knew when we were going into Galway United, we had, like, everyone was going to be backing us from the start, and we'd no doubt in them.
A couple of girls didn't make that move as well. There's a lot of more the experienced players who haven't gone over to Galway FC for various reasons, life reasons, work reasons, whatever it might be. How much was it a concern coming into the season, knowing that? That experience, say the likes of Julian Russell, for example, or even Foy Singleton, who's at loan, not having them in the dressing room, and kind of players like yourself, still in your teens, having to grow into those leadership roles?
Yeah, it's always going to be hard when you lose a few players, but I think the players that we brought in and the players that have stepped up from underage level to being senior, like, it wasn't that hard to change over, because we still had that, like, we still have people coming in to take their spots. Like, everyone stepped up when there was needed to be stepped up, and I think it really helped when they did step up and they believed that they could do it, that the change wasn't really much. Like, you're going to miss the players that have gone behind and moved on, but it's what's best for them. But then when the girls have stepped up, they've done an incredible job, and you can't fault them.
On you though, nice start to the season, 3 goals out of 7 games. Scored another goal in Tolka Park. You're making a bit of a habit of that. You scored the goal last year to get the equaliser, then you scored a winner this year. You seem to like playing there.
Yeah, look, it's a great stadium to play in, to be fair. The fans up there, they're mad, but it's a good feeling when you score up there. You just, I don't know, it sends like a bit of an ease.
As well as that, over the last couple of seasons, obviously you were involved with Treaty for 2 years prior to moving to Galway. You broke into the league with them. How nice is it as a former player? I know they're in the league, they're competition as well, but how nice is it as a former player to see how well they're doing this year compared to recent seasons?
Yeah, look, it's good for them, to be fair. Like, when I was down there, like, it is tough when you're not really getting what you wanted to get at the very start, and to see them improving, fair play to them, because they didn't give up.
What's the differences, though, from, say, playing with a Galway to a Treaty, when maybe expectations are slightly different on you?
It's more, I think it's the backing that people have behind you. Like, when you start the season strong and you're doing well, like, people are going to believe they're going to do well. Like, we came into this season with people thinking we weren't going to do well, we were such a young team, we won't challenge for much, but once we started that season strong and we put a word into people's mouths, then it kind of shocks people, and then they're like, oh, okay, Galway are going to put it up. So that's when we, like, people notice that we're battling for everything.
Breath, no. I was one of them. I was one of them. I've eaten humble pie.
We have a weekly delivery of humble pie to both our houses at this stage. We're well used to it. We get proven wrong every other week. It's brilliant. And we enjoy that. I know we do make predictions. We do say stuff on the show. It's what we believe at the time, and then we get proven wrong. And it's quite, I like it. I quite enjoy it, because I know in the rugby side of things here at Final Whistle, we had a club in round one of the league. We put them down as relegation fodder. It was a bit more pleasant than that, but they actually messaged us when they stayed up at the end of the season. Like, they were mid-table, they were fourth or fifth in the league, and they messaged us with the screenshot of the article and a little emoji. And it was like, going, I love that. I absolutely love that. But it is what it is. And we'll continue to do that. But in terms of, I suppose, from yourself, from your own point of view, Jen, of course, it hasn't just been about domestic stuff over the last couple of weeks. You've been involved in international setup, the under-19 side. We've heard on the grapevine, we'll talk about the football in a minute, but we've heard on the grapevine that under-19 dressing room is one of the most chaotic and crazy places to be. Are there any stories you can tell us about the hijinks that you get up to on international duty?
Not really, to be fair. Like, you just have the girls and the music. The music sometimes is a bit chronic, but look, the girls are unbelievable. When you go onto that setup and into the dressing room, everyone's ready to go. We're all heads on, music's blaring. You're just focusing on the game, but once the music and the girls are there, like, it gives you a great feeling in you.
I can't not now, Brevin. You brought the topic of international football up. Jenna, what's the jersey behind you? I was about to ask at the start.
There's a pendant in front of the jersey, though. It's just on the male Irish jersey, right? With a pendant in front of it. Yeah.
It's my Irish jersey from 17s. We're in Lithuania, yeah.
How have you found the season so far? You're very young, so you're only in the season, despite being in the league a few years, and your name's been circulating as one of the players to watch over the last few seasons. What have you noticed over the last two or three years in terms of the league and where it's going, and obviously the move to professionalism and stuff like that? You're very young. Is that something that might be in your future, or have you given a thought?
Yeah, it probably will be. But I'm gonna wait a few years. I think I'm gonna, the season's been going really well for me, and that's what I want to do. I want to keep my performance consistent week in, week out, develop myself, and then think about going other way. But for now, Galway United is where I am at, and every week I'm gonna keep performing for the club, and hopefully I've developed myself a bit more and the players around me.
It's a very diplomatic answer. I like it.
for someone that was coming to the league where social media is a massive presence, do you pay much attention to what's being written or what's being said on social media about either yourself or Galway within the games, or do you just switch off, Manon?
I look at it every now and again, but I kind of mainly switch off from it. Social media doesn't really bother me. Like, you know, you can give out about some things, you can agree with others, but social media to me means nothing. It's what you do on the pitch and what you believe and what your family, your friends can see around you is what really matters.
What's the ambition for the season? How close can Galway go to that league title?
Personally, I believe we can go to the very top, but we just got to keep performance consistent week in, week out. We got to keep training hard, develop each other, gelling together. We're now gelling together a lot better, so we got to keep our performance consistent, not dropping our levels throughout the game. And I believe that we can be contenders for the league. And but there's a League Cup and the All-Ireland Cup, and we strongly believe that we have a squad there that can win it.
Just on that, though, like, away form, as like Breffy mentioned, the under-19s, away form seems to be a real asset for you. Is it the bus trip up, or that gets you all amped because you're just spending a couple of hours together, or what is it? Because you've been great on the road this season.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's kind of sometimes it's the way things go, but I think because we got I think we were just waiting to get our first home win for us to kick off. And I think now that we've got that, I feel like no matter if it's a home or away game, we'll be there to show up and hopefully get the win.
Of course, DLR this weekend, and then a treaty, that one in Galway. You have to make it a home game, traveling from Limerick to play at Tralee Team United. How tough is it to get your head around that when you do have find yourself in that situation?
Yeah, look, it's hard. Like from being at a club for a few years to then moving and then playing against them. Look, it is tough, but at the end of the day, Galway's my club now, and I'll take every game that comes in my stride, and it won't affect my performance. I keep performing the way I'm going, and look, you can't really do much about it.
You'd have all the girls in Tralee muted for the weekend.
Will you read anything into the results recently? Like, you look at your play at DLR this weekend. Will you read anything into their results this weekend, or how will you approach that game?
Yeah, look, I'm big into analysing all the games and stuff. So I watch back their games. I'll look at the stats and whatever. But I mainly focus on ourselves and how we can be better and what we can do to exploit them and to get the win.
Of course, depending on how things go at the weekend, you could be in second place in the table. Again, depending on other results elsewhere. It's been a phenomenal start to life in Galway. I know I started the interview asking more or less the same question, but has it gone better than you anticipated it might? Or are you about where you thought you'd be?
I never really had doubts, to be fair, coming in this year. Like, pre-season started, you're kind of like, oh, what way is it going to go? But once we started pre-season well, we trained well, like we got our minutes in early, we got our games going, and once that first game hits and we play Wexford, knowing that Wexford were going to be contenders to the league and us losing slightly by a 1-0, it really shows that we could believe that we were really there to be contenders for the league, and I think that's what helped us as well, for us to realise where we actually stand in this league.
Was the Bows one a difficult one to take? Because obviously the way the goal went in, the deflection off Sarah Rowe, she'll claim it, but I don't think she knew much about it. Was that a difficult one to take, especially after the back of pushing Wexford so far and getting the win against Cork?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it was a frustrating game, like, but look, we learned from it, we bounced back, and that's what we gotta keep doing. We can't dwell on the losses. We gotta focus on the next game and try to see what we can do better to make their mistakes not happen.
Speaking of bouncing, I want to talk about the goal down in Cork, right? Long range free kick, bounced in the box, just inside the post, past the keeper. I'm guessing that wasn't what you intended to do with that delivery.
Well, look, you kind of put it into the box, aiming for where you're going to go, and luckily that bounce helped me and it went straight through.
If I'm not mistaken, you made the team of the week as a centre-back that week.
Yeah, I don't know.
She was probably in her own half. This is when she started the run-up. You've got those kind of nice long-range strikes in your arsenal, though. Like the game at the weekend against Sligo was a nice, but edge of the box, ball comes back and you just tuck it in. It's something you're growing into in your game, kind of a bit of maturity. Just get the head down and get the technique right and finish the strike. It's a side that we're seeing more and more out of you over the last couple of weeks. Do you feel that maturity growing on the pitch as well as off in your own self?
Yeah, 100%. Like, from even compared to last year, I feel like I'm a different person on the pitch. I really started my season the way I wanted it. Last season was kind of a bit rough at times, but to keep that consistency going, me, like, I'm happy where I'm at, but I know that there's still another level in me that I need to get to.
Interested though, did you do anything differently though in the off season to bring you on, or was it just the experience?
Yeah, like, I think the off season this year, like, last season was a bit difficult because I didn't know what I was going to do, so I was kind of jumping between training sessions, and then for this year to be settled down in Galway United with the management that we have, the pre-season we had, I think that's what has helped me had such a good start. But it's not that, like, it's off the pitch as well, what I'm doing at home, my family, what they're backing me the whole way, and I think, yeah, the off-season probably did help me, but that's still, if I had a good off-season, doesn't mean that my start of my season would have went well, so I had to still keep that going when the season started.
In terms of the start of the season, obviously Galway WFC pulled out of the league last year, replaced by Galway United. Other girls went elsewhere. You have been at other clubs before. Did it cross your mind to go elsewhere, or was it always going to be Galway United for you?
Well, yeah, it's going to cross my mind at some stages. Like, I was with somewhere else, but I felt coming into Galway United, I think it was the best next challenge for me. I felt like the players, when I went there, like you could see that they really welcomed you. You were really wanted there, and I think that's what helped me settle there. Especially it's close enough from home. So when I was doing my leaving cert, it was a good move for me.
You talked a little bit about, you know, when Bethany asked about moving clubs and stuff like that. I assume, because we're only looking from the outside in, because when you see social media, transfers are sort of being dripped and drabbed. You would have probably would just had much of a meeting before pre-season just to say, this is who we've got, just so you knew what was going on. Because it seemed to us as that, you know, it was coming out late and dry. We didn't, you'd always assume that the players were signed early.
Is that for this season?
This season.
No, not really. Like, had chats with Phil, but that's what you're going to do with every manager. Started pre-season, see what they're interested in and what they see that's going forward. And it's mainly the club's expectations and the platforms that it's going to bring you. And that's kind of it, really, yeah.
So we can't expect to see Jenna Slattery now play like six different clubs next. In 3 days, we're going to be announced by Treaty, Galway, at those. Listen, Jenna, it's been an absolute pleasure for your company this evening. Thanks so much for joining us. The very best of luck in DLR at the weekend and, of course, for the rest of the season, whatever that might bring. Any chance we might see you make a last late burst and get your name on a plane to Australia? Has that crossed your mind as well?
Yeah, look, it's always going to cross your mind. Like, the team is so hard to get into, but like what a feeling for it to be if I was named on that plane. But fingers are crossed, but we've got to keep working hard. We've got to keep the level of where I'm at and keep pushing myself. And maybe if it's not this year, maybe it's in the next few years, but it's going to be always my ambition.
Have you got flights booked? Are you going yourself?
No.
Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned before. Best of luck on the weekend, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Jenna Slattery there, very composed and mature young lady. She's got her wits about her, Aaron.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just in terms of when you're mentioning flights, where I think you're trying to find someone else who's not going like you.
I know. I found a soulmate. I'm good. Yeah.
Just the one thing I took away from Jenna just there is, and I sort of made a little note over here, is dedication and attitude. To me, that's, if you've got half the ability that you've got and you've got attitude and dedication to bring you along. But the thing about Jenna is a smashing young player. And I think she'll continue to grow. And like, listen, you talked about the longer range goals. I was on commentary last year when she scored the goal against Shelbourne when she looped Amanda Budden from 25, 30 yards. And you always knew when she got in a little bit of space, she was dangerous. And I think she's a big player for Galway this year. I wouldn't be surprised if she's thereabouts for the club's player of the year this year, because ultra consistent, and Galway need players like that if they want to keep getting results.
They're barely a third of the way through the season, but I can see it heading that direction. Absolutely. She's got 3 out of their 8 goals so far from a non-kind of attacking point of view is pretty good. We talked a little bit with Jenna and beforehand about the Sligo game. You mentioned it briefly in the interview. Galway 2-0 within the first 7 or 8 minutes and only just winning 2-1. Is that a bit of a worry for them, that they're not maybe putting teams that they should be putting to the sword quite fully across the line?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head there a minute ago when you said 8 goals in 7 games. That's the concern. Like, the first couple of games were either 1-0 wins or 1-0 losses. Like, the first 3 games they scored 1 goal, and it's been sort of the rest 6-7 goals in them last 4 games. Yes, it's a bit of a concern, but you'd wonder, you know, at that sort of stage, did a little bit of composure maybe drop out a little bit? But from a Sligo Rovers point of view, Emma Doherty obviously with the Sligo goal, and things keep getting worse for Sligo. But it's same like I said last week with Shelbourne against Treaty. Shell's just be happy to walk away with the 3 points and say Galway be the same.
Yeah, fair enough. It does keep them fourth in the table. We mentioned Chloe Singleton in that interview, of course, former Galway WFC player, as same as Jenna, but she got on the score sheet for Athlone Town, 2-0 winners against Cork City. Our good luck streak struck again. Dana Sheriff with icing on the cake, 10 minutes in time with a great effort. She ran onto a through ball and just buried it. Really good finish.
was it a great effort, or it was just an absolute gaping hole in the Cork defence that was just, and she just saved.
I was trying to be nice there.
I picked up though, even on the first goal, they let the ball bounce before Chloe comes and strikes it as well. Like, it's, for me, it's probably it's two defensive errors for the goals. Yes, Chloe strikes it well, but the ball shouldn't be allowed to bounce there. And I think it's when things aren't going your way, sort of them sort of errors creep into your game. And it's been a difficult season for Cork, but Athlone are getting that little bit of, they're getting that bit of momentum. Dana's getting a couple of more minutes. Maybe this week she might be in contention to play a little bit more, maybe start the game. And the Cork and Maddie Gibson, I think, will run a bit of riot when they get linked together. But another good win for Athlone. For Cork, the struggles just keep going, and it's going to be tough to turn that around.
But isn't it great to see the league now where you're at the stage where you make a mistake, you can see the goal, and the quality of the teams is so good that you can't afford to make those mistakes anymore?
But that used to only happen with three teams. It used to only happen with the top three teams, where now it's happening with a lot more teams. And I think when we talk about the Bows and Robbers game, we'll talk about the exact same thing at times as well. And I think you're right, it's great because it means teams have to be fully focused. They can't afford to be switched off, otherwise they're going to get punished.
Absolutely. Moving on to another game, we might jump to that Shamrock Rovers Bows game. The traditional Dublin Derby. I'm going to get hammered for saying that, but it is the traditional Dublin Derby in the men's game. First time that sides have met in senior competition. Of course, Rovers were in the league at the outset, but Bows weren't. And now it's the first time they've both faced off against each other. Great setting. Tallaght Stadium, as always, it's a great cauldron of football for a game like that. Shamrock Rovers would be really happy with the outcome, really. They were just clinical.
Yeah, they were very good. But just on that, can we really call it an actual proper derby? Because I don't think there's any tension in the women's side of it. That's why it's a little bit, whereas Piemont and Shells was always tense, you know. But for me, yeah, Rovers were very good. Abby Larkin obviously getting her first goal for Rovers, probably a bit disappointed how long it's taken. Jess Gargan making a little bit of a habit of scoring goals. She scored the header against Wexford and then scores another brilliant header against Bowes with a superb free kick from Jamie Thompson. The penno, yeah, it's handball. It's poor to give away. Then obviously Abby finishes her goal very well. But for me, the defending for the fourth goal is quite poor. They get themselves in six and sevens and they get capitalised on, and it's a nice finish then. It's a nice finish in the end from Anya. But
she scored harder goals, to be fair. Like, yeah. That was exactly one of the hardest goals she's ever had to put away in the back.
But the one thing I did take note of from that game is that I still think Bows have a bit of a fear factor when they play the likes of Shells and they played Rovers. Like, at times they don't come out and deliver the performances. Like I said last week, they'd have to be on their A game to deliver a performance last. And Saturday wasn't on their A game. Saturday they were punished for being below. And that's if they want to break the top four, they want to break in and around that, they're going to have to be on their A game when they come up against these sort of sides and get results, because realistically shipping four against Shamrock Rovers, and I know the management team won't be happy with that. And it's a difficult one, because coming into the game where you're sort of thinking we can maybe get something to maybe get being put back down into reality a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. In terms of the final two games of the season, let's maybe take them together. We've already kind of dealt with the DLR Treaty game at the very outset of the show, but there's one particular incident we want to talk about. I did flag at the very top. We're going to talk about refereeing across both of these, because we've had a few messages in asking us to take a look at stuff and maybe share our opinions on or maybe validate someone else's opinions in their head of particular instances. Let's start DLR Treaty. At home in the Markets Field, Treaty, they've played seven games. I suppose on a positive note, they've only lost four. Last year, that would have been six or seven. It's a good season comparative to where they were last year. Is that fair to say?
It's much better. But like last year, like you think when they ship six against Rovers, they ship eight against Athlone. You're thinking, oh no, here's another thing all over again. Then they come and beat Sligo. They get the draw with Cork. They lose 1-0 to Shells. Another draw here. Like, they're building a good bit of momentum. Defensively, they've been very good lately. And that's probably that's the big, big positive for me. Yes, there's a lot of work to do up the other end of the field, but you need to get the basics right at the back, and that'll sort of allow them to grow a little bit more. But I just think from them, like, you have to be happy where, if you're a Treaty fan, you have to be happy where they were this season, where they are at the moment, considering where they were.
Now, let's talk about the penalty. First of all, the build-up, we won't talk about the defending. I don't think players of the calibre of Jess Gleeson and Eve Badana need to be told they were a bit lackadaisical on the defending for the opportunity. But the actual opportunity itself, we can't show the highlights. We do have a still in a minute, but Hannah Saidi nips in between the two players from DLR, gets a cross in, blocked by Jess Gleeson. Definite calls for a handball. Your thoughts?
It's a tough one, because it probably, by the letter of the law, it probably is, but I don't think there was intent in it. That's the thing, and I don't think, like, she doesn't clearly go and raise her hand up really, really high to try and, you know, block it. It sort of comes up when she tried to bring the foot up a little bit. It's a tough one. It's probably on the edge of the box as well, but it probably is a penalty, but it's one of them that you see them giving, you see them don't giving. It's, for me, it's probably not a stonewall penalty.
Yeah, I think I'd echo that. We've just a bit of a still here. It's a minute and a bit into injury time. And you can see Jess Gleeson is in the box just. The cross comes in. It hits her right hand, the one furthest from the ball as it happens. It appears to hit her arm. We still say from this camera angle, you can't really tell. And I think you're right. I think you've seen them given. I've seen them not given. I don't think you could have an argument either way.
The only thing is, yeah, and I set you off there, but the only thing for me is I would like to see a clinical forward actually score that before it even goes wide. But from the decision, we see them give and we see them not give. And for me, that was a late chance that if she got that touch right, she buries that into the back of the net and treaty win 1-0, and then they're off with a happy result. But when it's not given, you understand why people are calling for it and things like that. But it's not one that I'd say is a stonewall.
Now, talking about other penalty opportunities, one caught my eye as I was watching through the highlights of the P-Mount Wexford game. Now, the highlights discussion is a whole different animal. I have so many issues with the highlights. In some ways, it's brilliant. In other ways, it doesn't include the actual highlights. It's like someone just says, okay, there's a goal. Clip that. It's very little extra. They did put in the extras. They put in a sending off. We'll come back to that in a minute. That's Kira Rossler. We've got her marching orders the first minute of injury time in that game as well. But this one happens very late on, 8 minutes into injury time. Piemont, one goal up against Wexford. Wexford down a player. And as you can see, just inside the box. Again, these are a bit blurry. They are screenshots from LOI TV. Go back and take a look at them if you have a season pass or if you watch the game. But I believe that's Karen Duggan, if memory serves me right. On the edge of the box. Again, there's a tussle in for the ball. I've seen them given. I've not seen them given. Your thoughts?
I didn't think on Saturday when I initially seen it, I didn't think it was a penalty. When I initially seen it on the day, I was down that end of the ground. I didn't think it was. But like, there was a couple of calls, of penalty calls. The one in the build up to the Karen Duggan goal as well in the box, that could have easily been given as a penalty as well. It was one where it's. The problem is there was a lot of, I think the referee let a good bit go in that game in terms of physicality. So you sort of seen when he was towing the line where some of the challenges being borderline, free kicks or not, that you probably weren't going to get a soft penalty against him. It was going to have to be a clear stonewall penalty for him to actually give it. And he tried to let the game go because both sides like to play the game physical at times. And I think the referee sort of realised that and let them have a little bit. There was... Like, for me, I didn't think it was a penalty. And looking back at it, I think it'd be a harsh penalty to give. But the only thing I will say, and we'll talk about Kira Rossler's red card in a minute, is that Wexford did have chances, though. When you see them when they're breaking on the counter-attack, they were breaking in numbers. But the final pass, again, just let them down. And they just couldn't really get in. And, like, Emily Corber had a couple of chances where she was slipped in. But and then they just couldn't. P-Mount recovered. Like, the one thing... you take away from the game from a P-Man point of view is like this. I put a picture on social media of Niamh Burke chasing to not let a ball go for a corner, to put it out for a goal kick, and it was just a determination. And I think that for me was evident from the P-Man side that they worked very, very hard. Young Jess Fitzgerald in midfield, Breffney, oh my god, she was brilliant. She's only 16, she was fantastic in the center midfield. On Kylie Murphy for quite a lot of the game, kept her and Adele Kennedy quiet enough in the game. And like, The Wexford goal comes from a P-Mount throw-in. Rihanna Jarra wins the ball, plays a 1-2 with Kylie Murphy and a lovely finish. But Rihanna has to go off then after 58 minutes after being down twice with a niggle. And then she's replaced by Emily Corbett, who was on the bench. And you sort of think then, Piemont start to take over a little bit. The first goal, maybe Maeve Williams won't really want to look at it back. She sort of pushed the ball up in the, into the air to an Erin McLaughlin close, fired home close range. And then the Karen Duggan, the ball wasn't clear properly. There was the goal, it was a call for handball in the box that it eventually worked out, curled into the far corner. A lovely finish from the Piemont skipper. But like, even she said to me after the game, she was like, these are the sort of games we would have lost last year, whereas that's the sort of mentality. I think the hunger is there. I think the Shells game sort of bit them a little bit and they bounced back superbly. But from a Wexford side, you'd be worried at the minute just with the way the results are going, with three defeats on the spin.
Yeah, it's a strange league position to see them in, all right, after a third of the season gone. The final thing we're going to talk about in terms of the games last weekend is, of course, that red card for Ciara Rosser. Now, I caught this on the highlights. I didn't watch the full game through. The highlights, I'm not going to get into it because it will just, my blood will boil, but I just think...
I didn't catch it. For the audience, before you say anything, I didn't catch it. Loya Voice was actually sent off. So okay. The fact you've caught it on the highlights.
Well, I caught on the highlights that she was sent off, and I was like, going, it didn't show it, and it just showed her being shown a red card. And I was like, why has she got a red card? And I went into the game, went back and looked at, I couldn't see anything. There was a whole ball of nothing. Jenna Burrell got injured and stretching for a ball, getting a minute or two's treatment. They got up and he went and he booked somebody.
Chloe Maloney.
Yeah, Chloe Maloney got booked ultimately for kicking the ball away. That was kind of obvious when you watched the thing back, but you had to really notice it. And but when I went a bit forensic, I'm not going to lie. I'm watching too many cop shows this weather. And she was booked in the first half. This is on 41 minutes, and you can see the ref on the far side of the field.
For a bit of context for the listener, she was booked because there was she'd committed a couple of fouls as well. And like the referee sort of said to her, listen, anymore, I'm going to have to book you. And she had another one there and she was booked for that. So like she had been given a pre-warning. The second one is sort of...
Let's jump to the red card first, because it just shows there's been a red card. There's nothing has happened for about a minute and a half at this stage.
Yeah.
Except the booking of Chloe Maloney. Jed has been getting treatment and the free kick hasn't happened. Play hasn't resumed yet. And everyone's kind of talking about, you can hear the fourth official very vocal on the sideline. So when I said this to you originally, you told me, because your understanding of it been at the game was the fourth official got her sent off, right?
Yeah.
But actually, I did a bit of forensic research, and here we go. You can see she's getting a yellow card. This is seconds after the the foul. The handball happened. Emily Corbett handled the ball just beside Jetters on the ground. Chloe Maloney on the edge of the box at the very top left there has just kicked the ball away. So it's literally in the aftermath. And it's obvious Ciara Rosser has done something the referee doesn't like.
I wonder how she said something about Chloe kicking the ball away.
Yeah, I'd imagine she has said something or called for a yellow card or maybe criticised the ref for the handball because she may or may not have seen it. We don't know. We are completely and utterly... and only that I went back and like slowly watched it through, the camera pans away really quickly. And if you don't see it there in the split second, you miss it. And that's why she was sent off. The language from the fourth official, if you listen closely, you can actually hear what he's saying. He's reminding the referee, who has flashed two yellow cards, and the fourth official has reminded him which players. He's gone and checked his notebook, realized he's already booked Ciara Rosser, and he's then sent her off a minute and a half later. So out of context, it looks like he's just randomly picked her out of the lineup.
But there was another incident. I don't know if it's for the Chloe Maloney one or slightly earlier in the game. It might have been for the Chloe one as well, where the fourth official is actually directing what player to book as well, because the referee sort of...
Oh, it's Chloe Maloney's, yeah.
Yeah, and so so
he has called for it there, but he did keep a note of the... he did keep a note of the first booking, instructed him on the second booking, and then the referee realised and corrected it for the red card.
But like,
we criticise referees on this show from time to time when it's warranted, and I think, to be fair, they probably got it right. I can't speak to the actual incident, but they got the logistics of it correct.
Yeah. And the fact that Jetta was getting treatment and there was eventually a sub sort of gave him that opportunity to get that right, because you'd worry if he books her and then play starts quickly, he mightn't have realised.
Well, if say he misses that and they get the penalty that they could have got 5 minutes later, who's likely to be taking that penalty? It's either Kyler Murphy or Ciara Rosser for me. I mean, so she could end up rescuing a point despite not supposed to be been on the pitch. Anyway, the actual game itself, you were at it. What do you think?
It was a high pace, high intense game. You could feel the nervousness a little bit within the Wexford side, obviously having haven't lost a couple of games, and when they go one, even before they go one, the first half, the chances where they were getting wide, they were having a lot of success getting wide and getting balls into the box, but it was just they couldn't really get anybody on the end of it. Probably a little bit lucky not to go behind in the first half. Abby Brophy across a low cross comes in. Abby Brophy back in centre half, just with the way things fell at that specific time, sort of gets a little bit of a touch on it, and Maeve Williams reacted quite quickly to keep it out. But it's half time, you're probably thinking nil all, yeah, probably a fair result. But second half, when Wexford scored, you were thinking, right, they might kick on. But Pima just gradually grew into the game. And as they continued to push forward, when they got the first goal, to me it was looking as if it was only going to be Piemont who would get the second goal, and they would drive on because they were pushing and pushing and pushing. Where every time Wexford were forward, they weren't really making Neve Burke make big saves or put her under big pressure. And it, for me, it was a sign of the, you can see Piemont, they're a really fit team this year. They were able to keep going for the 90 minutes. But as I said earlier, I was really impressed with young Jess Fitzgerald in the middle. It was only her second, I think it was only her second start for the team. And like, she was really, really good. It was interesting to watch James O'Callaghan actually coaching her after the game, showing her where she could have done things slightly differently. And like, realistically, when they come to this weekend, we'll chat about the fixtures, but there's going to be no team talk needed this weekend for Piemont. And it's probably the right game to have after the international break, a really, really tough test to really put them back on a good keel.
Wait, they're not playing anybody interesting this weekend, are they? We'll be talking about all of the comings and goings from PRL Park in just a couple of moments. We will just wrap up with a look back at all the fixtures or the results of the weekend. Galway United 2-1 winners over Sligo Rovers. Jenna Slattery, our guest tonight, one of the match-winning goal scorer in the first 10 minutes of that game. Treaty and DLR scored a straw down in the Markets Field, while Piemont United, that 2-1 win over Wexford Utes in PRL Park, and Bowes, unfortunately for them, point of view, beaten 4-0 at Tallaght Stadium by Shamrock Rovers by Lachlan.
Definitely, if you look there, four home wins, only Treaty were the only home team not to win at the weekend.
Exactly, Athlone Town 2-0 winners over Cork City there in the Athlone Town Stadium. Looking at the league table, what effect that has on it. Piemont 4 points clear at the top of the table. One game played more than most of their rivals at the top of the 11-team table at the moment. Shamrock Rovers, their visitors on Saturday, are second in the table, 14 points, four behind Piemont, while Shells and Galway United sit on 13. Athlone 3 further back on 10, while Bowes, DLR Waves, Wexford Utes, and Treaty United, more or less 1 point separate in each of them, 9, 8, 6, and 5, respectively, while Cork City and Sligo Rovers will be hoping to break their duck this weekend. It's a big ask, but they will be hoping to maybe go one better than they have done so far. Cork host Bohemians, Sligo Rovers host Athlone Town again, another club with plenty of familiarity between the two dressing rooms there. In terms of top scorers in the league, Kate Mooney says on 5, Anya Gorman's 2 goals put her up to 5 points, or 5 goals, should I say, after 6 games, while Jessie Stapleton and Megan Smith-Lynch and Dana Sheriff on 4 points. Sheriff, the only one of those who got on the score sheet last week. Shells, I think they were idle last week.
They were indeed.
And then Karen Duggan and Jenna Slattery, obviously, with goals last weekend. Chloe Singleton also got one. Rihanna Jarrett, she also got a goal. Jess Cargan on 2, and Kayla Hamrick on 2 at the end. Emma Doherty picked up a goal as well. Her second.
That's some goals per game for Dana Sheriff at the minute.
I think goals per minute is really...
Goals per minute,
it's a goal every half hour. That's a hat-trick a game. You know, it's not bad going. But that's where we are at the moment in terms of people putting the ball in the back of the net and those trying to keep the ball out of the back of the net. Eva Dana's clean sheet puts her top of the charts at the moment. Four clean sheets from 6. Can you imagine? It's not going all DLR's Waves season this so far. This is 7th place. Could you imagine what it would be like if they didn't have her in nets for them at the moment? It could be a real struggle. Only 6 times they've found the onion bag themselves. 4 goals conceded so far this year. Any other clean sheets last week that spring to mind? Nyla Peterkin got her second one of the season, while Anne-Marie Uliak, if I've pronounced that wrong, I apologise, her first clean sheet of the season. Treaty are off the mark. 9 clubs represented there, despite there being 11 players on the list. 9 of the 11 clubs have kept shutouts so far this season. Just Sligo and Cork to get off the mark in that respect. But some really impressive performances. And it's interesting to see the likes of Eve Badana at the top of the table, her side struggling in the league, while Abigail Ronayan, while maybe not necessarily keeping clean sheets, playing as part of a very comfortable fourth place side in the league at the moment there.
Yeah, it's, we always said at the start of the season that Eve Badana would be there or thereabouts in terms of if DLR is to be anywhere, these, like the fact that she's kept four clean sheets already, considering where DLR are, it's quite impressive. And I think a lot of credit has to go to not just her, to the DLR's defense, because we probably thought that they'd ship quite a lot of goals, but they're holding tall. It'd be interesting to see what they do this weekend if they can hold out again. But like, Eve is a top goalkeeper. There's a reason why she was capped for Ireland. Like, in terms of, as you say, at the likes of Abigail Ronayan, I'd say if you offer
Abigail out,
if you offered a keeper like that down that sort of end of the table, they'd say, okay, I'll take no clean sheets, but if you give me fourth place, you give me third place, you give me so many wins, I don't care. If I can see the goal, but we win the game, that's it. You know, and I think that's sort of the way it's working with some of the keepers higher up that conceding goals, but they're still winning games.
I know Abigail should want the clean sheets as well, but it is what it is. In terms of fixtures this weekend, of course, DLR Waves in action again. They host Galway United, both keepers up against each other. What are the odds on a 0-0 draw in that particular game? DLR, they like a 0-0 draw in Belfield. Peamount United host Shamrock Rovers. That's probably my tie of the weekend. We'll talk about all these games in just a couple of moments. Cork City host Bowes and Turners Cross at 5 o'clock, while Sligo Rovers and Athlone meet in the showgrounds also at 5 o'clock kickoff, while Shelburne make the journey down south to Wexford Utes. Another tough task for Wexford Utes. Obviously, one game stands out in terms of, for a whole load of reasons, the top two teams in the table. There's obviously a narrative been ongoing for weeks about where players are going to and from the towards the tail end of last season. Are you
going
to go to PRL Park on Saturday?
There's no place I'd rather be on Saturday. And that's the one destination it has to be. The tension will be huge. Like, listening to James O'Callaghan after the game, sort of saying, listen, if I have to give you motivation for next week, considering what's going on, I don't think you'll have to motivate him at all. I'm really, really interested to see how Karen Duggan gets on this week in terms of the way she's been playing. I wouldn't be surprised if she bosses the midfield as well, and she really puts the Rovers midfield under pressure, whereas they may have to do something slightly different, because against Shells, they sort of at times when Shells boss the midfield, they struggle, but they were creative going wide out wide against Shells, and that's sort of what helped unlock them. Peamount, I think, will be a different animal with the form they're in, the ex-players going back. There'll be a lot of spice, a lot of heat, and I think tensions will rise high. The only thing I will say is good luck to the referee, because there's no doubt that it's going to be a difficult game to referee, just in terms of the emotions will be high. I think it'll be close. If Peamount can win this, it'll really set a stall out. If Shamrock Rovers win it, they'll obviously go top, and then even more questions will be asked about.
They're four points behind. They've a game in hand. But Peamount have that 4-point cushion. I could be wrong. The league table could be wrong. If it is, I apologise. I'm just double checking it here now. But
you could be right.
I'm right. I won't sack the researcher just yet. I have a job tomorrow. But no, it's a case of if PR win that game at the weekend, there's a hypothetically a not unrealistic situation where Galway might only get a draw in DLR. Shells down in Wexford may only pick up a point. That's not unrealistic in terms of expectations. Peamount could have a 7-point lead if they were to win, with only 12 games left to go in the title race. That would be a huge statement given how the close season went for that club. Would be a huge statement.
Yeah, but I think the way the close seasons went has actually made them stronger as a group. I think that's for sure. The only concern from a Peamount point of view is obviously Carla McManus has torn her ACL and will miss the rest of the season. So that's a bit of a loss for them. But Kate Mooney sort of worked hard and led the line. So the thing is, they're bringing in some younger players. They're giving some other younger players a chance as well this year in terms of Peamount. The one surprise is that Jetta Beryl is playing centre back, but she was actually quite good at, considering we'd be more used to seeing her playing on the wing, but she was very, very good for them. Like, Piemont, they have a lot of experience, they have a lot of guile, they've been on house. There's no doubt that James O'Callaghan will be in the airs as the likes of Colly O'Neill at the weekend. Can Rovers keep composed is the question. What sort of crowd will go out to Piemont for that game? But I think it's a game that I think it's definitely the tide around for me, but sometimes we say that we build these sort of games up and then it mightn't even live up to it at all. And you just hope it does live up to it, because we built the Shells game up against Shamrock Rovers and that really lived up to it. So you'd be hoping that this does again. And like, there's no doubt that the Piemont talk all week will be the players that have gone, you know, we need to put in a performance from the likes of Anya, though. It's just another day for Anya. She's left before. She went to DLR, to UCD Waves before. So for her coming back, she's done it before in the opposite dressing room. It's just going to be like another day.
In terms of the other games, Wexford and Shells, that would have been a top-of-the-table clash in previous seasons. The way Wexford season's going, it's almost a must-win for them.
Oh, absolutely. It's a must-win. Absolutely, it's a must-win. If they fail to pick up 3 points in this game, they're really going to get cut adrift. Yes, they've got the 2 games in hand, but as the old saying goes, points in the border are a lot better, and especially at this stage when you're coming off the back of run of defeats. Like, the thing for me is, yes, they showed a lot of hunger and a lot of grit against Piemont, but it was just the final third is just lacking a little bit. Like, you'd wonder, is Rhianna Jarrett going to be fit, having come off the pitch? She probably will be. It might have just been a bit of fatigue because of the intensity of the game. But Emily Corbett at the bench at the weekend, what's Emily thinking there? Coming after making the move, Matt Lones, a player of the year last year, sitting on the bench, things maybe not working the way she would have wanted. It's going to be tough for Wexford to turn that corner, and I think it'll be extremely difficult for them to do it this weekend. I don't expect them to beat Shelston.
Yeah, interesting times ahead for that club. Sligo Rovers host Athlone again. We've talked about players moving in both directions over the years. Probably the most prominent one would be Myrne Devaney. Also, Kelsey Munro would have played underage for Sligo as well. They're both now obviously featuring for Athlone this season. Your thoughts on where that's going to go? Are we looking at another Athlone win, or can Sligo change their form around? It's been a poor run so far.
I can't see them changing it around. I just think Athlone are getting that little bit of momentum going. Things are starting to work for them. Players are starting to really bet into the team, especially some of the new signings. And I have a feeling Athlone could win 2-3 in this game.
Yeah, worry.
Is that your choice of call the weekend?
That's where I'm going to be. But I worry for Sligo over the next few weeks. I think we're starting to see them getting further and further behind in terms of energy levels and determination just doesn't seem to be what it was last year. We saw them pull off some phenomenal results, deservedly phenomenal results last year. I think they need something like that. I think Saturday is an opportunity against a team that's relatively close to them, geographically at least, that they wouldn't be expected to beat, for them to step up and go, do you know what, we beat Wexford here last year, we beat Shells here last year, you're the President's Cup holders, you got to the FA Cup final, we're going to go out and take the game to you. Do they have it in the locker to do that? That remains to be seen. But I think it needs to happen, and it needs to happen soon, or Sligo could end up with a pointless season. I hate saying that, but I think it could be where we end up, unfortunately.
But that's a massive fear.
Yeah. They can't turn out momentum. They need to do something, and something pretty quick. DLR and Galway, we touched on already. Your thoughts on that? How do you think it's going to go?
I think it'll be an away win. I think Galway should, with the form they've got, they're unbeaten now. They're now saying that, I've said that on the show, with the fact they've won all their away games, they'll probably come up and slip up. But like, for me, if DLR are to get something on it, they'll probably need Galway to be a little bit off the pace and for them to be at top kilter. But it'll be a difficult one for DLR. I think Galway should be too strong for them. But listen, we've said a couple of things about DLR this season in terms of results, and they've surprised us. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do pick up a point, but I expect Galway to win.
Yeah, they went to that game as favourites. Another team going into a game away as favourites is probably Bohemians. They make the long journey down to Cork City at Turner's Cross at 5 p.m. kickoff on Saturday evening. Bows, too much firepower for a Cork side struggling at the back?
If they're switched on, it's too much. If they're not, like, we've seen what happened last year when they went down there. expected to win, get beaten 2-1 down there, sort of one of them games that you're thinking, right, Bowes will win here, they'll kick on. They didn't last year. They have to be switched on. They have to be ready to go. Yes, they have too much firepower. There's no doubt that the Bowes squad is definitely better than the Cork squad. But the problem with Bowes is that they're lacking a little bit of consistency at the minute. And if they don't have the consistent performance, then they will drop points down there. And it's just, like, that's the problem. That's the worry about Bowes, is that they're not consistent enough for a top four, top five finish. So this weekend is where they'll have to pick up the 3 points if they want to be in that reckoning.
Yeah, similar to Sligo, I think this could be a weekend, an opportunity for Cork to put a marker down to show the progress they've made under Danny Murphy. Because they have made progress, it just hasn't represented itself in the results just yet, in my opinion. Anyway, I think that's it for the week. Aaron, anything else before you, do you want to give referees another hammer?
No. Listen, I was happy with the referee. I was happy with the referee out in Pima. The only thing I will say, and you sort of touched on it, is we don't know what Rossi said, so we can't make a judgment to whether it was a valid yellow card or it wasn't. But if he realizes she's already been booked, does he send her off or does he give her a second yellow? I'm not sure. But if she said something to antagonize him, you can't defend it.
Yeah. We did also get a comment in about the referees, and not necessarily about the quality of referees, but the frequency that certain clubs are seeing certain referees. One club saying that, reached out to me anyway and saying that they had their four home games, they've had the same referee 3 times. And just that they were concerned that it was maybe, I know referees is a problem, availability of referees is a problem, and particularly good referees at this level. But it would be nice to see it a bit more shared out in terms of that one referee. Not that they would, but that it leaves them open to developing a set against a player or whatever. I don't believe that's a thing, but clubs believe that's a thing.
The problem is we see it so often. Like, I'm seeing the same referees at a combined of the Dublin games. I'm seeing the same sort of pool of referees every week. It's every game. It's not necessarily, I don't know if they're just doing it because of geographic as well.
I'd imagine,
like,
so.
It's tough, like, because I know they brought, I think Mark Houlihan went down to Sligo for a game, having done games in Dublin as well. Like, it's tough. The problem is if you turn around and say, okay, listen, we'll bring more referees, does it incur extra cost on the clubs? Does it incur extra cost? Is it a cost thing? Like, I don't mean to be bad, but the Women's National League is seen slightly below the League of Ireland on a Friday night, whereas there's a lot of games on a Saturday. You've got underage, men's, women's. So there's a lot of referees. So the pool of resources to pull may not be available, may not be there for the amount of top referees that we do need. So that's probably why we're seeing more and more referees do the same sort of games.
I don't have a problem with Lions people and fourth officials being repeated or being locals or being, because the influence they can have on a game is, it's not nothing, but it's not everything, if that makes sense. It's fairly limited, offsides, maybe a couple of words with the ref here and there. But I think the referee should be rotated. I've no problem with somebody local being on a game as long as it's not the same person every week. And I know when I was involved with a team at this level, we saw the same guy every second week, and it just wasn't good enough. But listen, it is what it is. We're going to wrap up before we hit the hour mark, though, Aaron. It's one of the rules we have here on the show. So we'll give it 90 seconds before we wrap up. We're going to leave it there. Thank you so much to Jenna Slattery for joining us this week. A pleasure, as always, to be joined by one of the up-and-coming talents in the league. I'm not quite sure who we'll have on next week. We'll see what happens out of this week's game. We'll see who scores a match winner in the first 10 minutes of a game and invite them on next week. Now that we've had Jenna on, of course, she's going to score a hat-trick in Belfield at the weekend, and Galway will win 3-0, and it'll be all our responsibility. You take credit for it. Aaron, pleasure as always, and we shall be back with you again next week. Don't forget, you can get match reports, previews of all the games, statistics of all the games on our website, finalwhistle.ie. We'll be back with you next week. We will talk to you then.